Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about why Wall Street must crash, must hit bottom, so we can start all over and do it right this time. Richard Clark from Op-Ed News will share those perspectives, and then I'll ask you to call in and share yours. The latest on health and healing and why women have tried so many diets. How many diets do you think a woman has tried before the age of 45? I'll give you that answer. And also, we're going to do a lot on the environment today. The latest. Remember I explained why Obama had to pass the tar sands pipeline? It all has to do with where he gets his dollars bundled. All he had to do is just look and then match where a person gets their money and financial support, not just now. Now is setting the stage for later. Remember, in office 4 years or 8 years, but a lifetime of private jets, meetings, heads of states, insider deals, always at the front of the table. Look at Bill Clinton. President Clinton has earned more money out of office than all the other presidents of the United States in history combined. Obama will double what Clinton did. That's what you're all not looking at. You're looking at some false notion of illusion. We want him. We want all of our politicians. We want our religious leaders to do the right thing. We wanted the producer of this Coney 12, 2012 to be the right story, to tell us the truth. It was only half truth. Yeah, there was a bad apple out there who caused a lot of children to be brought into an army and a militia and whacked off arms. But it was only half true. He hadn't been around a long time, 6 years in Uganda. But what about the other people who are equally guilty of genocide, including the people we support, the past and current leaders in Uganda and the Congo and these other places? And now we find out this guy who did this was arrested on charges of lewdness, masturbating in public. And then again, he's what, one of these evangelicals? Well, that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. But we want people to be something they're not. So I'm going to tell you why President Obama is set to speed up approval tomorrow of the tar sands pipeline. Then a simple issue. Does genetically modified food increase the incidence of obesity? Then France bans GMO. And then we're going to talk about cell phones and the latest on fluoride. So we have a lot to talk about. And my guest in the second part of our program is going to be a real short answer guest. I'm going to ask him to answer yes or no. No dialoguing, just yes or no on some very important issues. Ken DeVecchio, he's a former judge. He's tried over 400 cases as a practicing criminal attorney. And he is considered one of the finest constitutional scholars in the United States. He's written textbooks on constitutional law. And he's going to be here because I have put the word out. I'm looking for people who are running for office really as a third-party person, meaning they're running as a populist. They're running to try to change things if they can and at least establish some platforms in the long term if nothing is done in the short term. So he's from New Jersey, and he's going to run for U.S. Senate there, so I'm going to ask him some tough questions. Let's see what he has to say. Let's start. We have a lot to share today. First up, this deals with estrogen plus progestin. Why is that a bad combination? It increases a woman's risk of cancer. That's correct. Estrogen plus progestin is especially bad in postmenopausal women taking hormone therapy. I'm so adamantly opposed to women taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy. There's nothing it would provide you that you can't get naturally, but what it gives you is frequently a heart attack, a stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. A review published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute found in the past decade results from large prospective cohort studies and the Women's Health Initiative, randomized placebo-controlled hormone therapy trials, and it's all bad. estrogen alone and estrogen plus progestin influence risk of breast cancer. Now, why is that bad estrogen alone? Well, because if you're overweight, more estrogen. Stressed, estrogen. Eating animal proteins, estrogen. What if you're all three? Lots of estrogen. Why do you think that overweight women have the highest incidence of cancer? Now we know this. And although hormone therapy is currently used by millions of women for menopausal symptoms, there's just no reason to be doing this any longer. So I'm suggesting don't do it. We can work with you. We can rebalance your progesterone and estrogen level to where it's not cancerous. We can give you items in the diet, the green vegetables, the fruits, the berries, which actually protect you by giving you a phytoestrogen, which is anti-carcinogen. So much to do. So it's not as if we're starting from scratch. We've done this many, many times. Now, because of this report that just came out today, and I'm going to put up on our website within the next day or two the most definitive study yet done. It was a clinical trial with 257 women, menopausal and postmenopausal, and the results of that were really substantial. In fact, it was published, and then I made a presentation along with Dr. Martin Feldman, the medical director of the study, at the World Congress on Anti-Aging's conference in Chicago. That information now, they asked me just yesterday, would I do a chapter in their new anti-aging encyclopedia that only goes to doctors? And I said I would, on this very topic. So this is something that we have hard scientific proof. You can reverse menopausal symptoms. You don't have to get breast cancer. But nothing in the traditional orthodox medical model is going to prevent it. But you can. You can. So please don't use synthetic estrogen replacement therapy with progestin. 61, that's how many diets the average woman by the age of 45 has tried. 61. Not good. And why? Because most people don't understand the basics. They get into these ideas of wanting the weight instantaneous. They believe in these infomercials and these products that people promote. Oh, instant, eat this, take that. They're all garbage. The only way that you're going to lose weight is you're going to increase your metabolism by exercising aerobically 6 days a week for 1 hour, half hour, 3 days a week, resistance exercise at full burn. That means no junk exercise. Do it till it hurts. When it comes to resistance, and if you're out there able to carry on a normal conversation when you're biking or walking or jogging, then you're not going fast enough. You should be really aerobic. That changes the metabolism because remember, the fat on your belly, the fat on your thighs, the fat under your arm does not belong to your arms, your belly, or your thighs. It's part of the overall metabolism. So when you burn more calories than you're taking in, you'll lose weight and you'll tighten muscle and you'll detoxify because a lot of the toxins, lead, cadmium, mercury, heavy metals, nickel, that's stored along with pesticides, herbicides, pollutants in your fat. That's why anytime anyone is losing weight, they should also detoxify at the same time. Watermelon with lemon juice, great detoxifier. Little apple cider vinegar with honey in a glass, maybe a teaspoon, in a glass of 16 ounces of cabbage juice, phenomenal detoxifier. Those are the things you do while each day you're losing weight. You don't go on a crash diet. And you don't go on a high-protein diet or a low-carb diet or a fat-free diet because these are just fads meant to manipulate people. So when you do it right, you'll get the weight off gradually, not all at once, and then you'll keep it off, and you'll feel better. Cadmium is a toxin. It's a heavy metal. It's a toxic heavy metal. And it's in the food that you can eat if you're not paying attention because it's found in many farm fertilizers. Not organic, but, you know, that genetically modified commercial farming. And it ends up getting into our soil and water. And some of the main sources of cadmium in the diet are bread and cereals, potatoes, root crops, and vegetables. Now, once it enters your body, cadmium may mimic the effects of the female hormone estrogen, which can fuel the growth of certain breast cancers. According to Dr. Marisa Wise, Director of Breast Radiation Oncology and Breast Health Outreach at the Lankenau Medical Center in Pennsylvania, quote, now there's cadmium hanging on to our carrots and whole grains, the very vegetables that are supposed to be good for us. Hello, they are good for you if they're organic. They're not good for you if they're not. So if you want to get the cadmium out, chelation therapy can do that. Sea vegetables can help do that. Spirulina and chlorella can do that. Wheatgrass juice is phenomenal for doing that. When any time I detox someone at a sleepaway, and especially someone who's getting off alcohol or cocaine or heroin, which I've helped thousands get off of, I'm having him do wheatgrass almost every hour. Now, you don't want to go do that on your own because you'll just barf it up. You have to know what you're doing. But there's nothing you're going to put in your body that's going to detoxify you of heavy metals, mercury, cadmium, better than wheatgrass juice, especially if you know what to spike it with, especially with homeopathics. But don't eat non-organic because you're getting in all that cadmium. That's the latest on that. Now, blueberries and apples, good news here, they're tied to a lower diabetes risk. This is from Reuters, and this is from the American Diabetic Association. Here's what it says. It says eating more blueberries, apples, and pears may be linked to lower risks of diabetes. These fruits are loaded with flavonoids, a natural compound present in certain fruits and vegetables and grains, and that is benefiting lower risk of heart disease and cancer. Quote, people who ate a higher amount of blueberries or apples tended to have a lower risk of type 2 diabetes. This according to research fellows at Harvard School of Public Health. And that's good for everyone. Well, I know a lot of you are eating your berries every day. You're getting lots of them. So you're doing the right thing. One of the ways, this is an old remedy. This goes way back. Do you realize that in the 1880s and 90s, they were making fresh juice and giving colonics, different type than what we do now? They were, they even had a body stimulation by putting a very low voltage in having a person stimulate muscle tissue with it. They had all kinds of interesting things. Homeopathics, naturopathics, very common. Cleansing diets. And one of the promoters of that was Graham of the Graham Cracker. And another was Dr. Kellogg, one of the two brothers who founded Battle Creek Mission, Michigan. And he was the leading physician health advocate of his generation. And then because of him, Bernard McFadden came along. And McFadden was a big advocate of lifting weights and being very vigorous. And he didn't have the best diet from my perspective. But his attitude on life, very positive, surrounding yourself with positive thoughts, positive people, very determinist mindset, but lots of juicing, cleansing. And he believed going into the country, and the more often you were in the country, the better it would be. And his wife came to see me when I was on WMCA radio. I'm going to guess at that time she was in her early 90s, late 80s. Johnny Lee McFadden, cheerful, positive, exuberant, and she said, I couldn't carry him, but I've got a gift for you. And I didn't know who she was, and she said, my husband would really be happy to hear what you have to say. And so she lived nearby, and she said she had two cases, and I went over, and they were first edition signed of this health rejuvenation program of her husband. I didn't know he was the second biggest publisher in America after William Randolph Hearst. He published all these magazines and very vital. And I said, well, what did he die from? Well, he went to parachute. I think it was his 85th birthday. And he parachuted, and they took him in the hospital and examined him afterwards. And someone gave him a shot, and he died from the effects of that shot. I said, whoa, that's terrible. But and she then, about 6 months later, I took a friend of mine, Dr. Audrey Carger, a wonderful human being, a naturalist. Tell you how natural she was. It was the middle of March. It was cold out. It was upstate at my farm. And she came by the day before, and she said, I'm in the area, and I didn't think you'd mind if I just came by and spend a day here communing with nature. I said, no, sure, you go over and stay in the guest lodge over there. And so the next morning I go out for my run with my brothers, Howard and Steve, and we start up the road, and suddenly I hear splash, splash. And I look over. There she is. I'm going to guess that time she was 75 years old. She's swimming in the lake, and it's freezing cold. And I said, you cold? She says, no. She says, I used to swim like this in Germany all year, 12 months a year, no matter what the weather. She says, it's good for you. I said, yeah, great. Good for you. I'm not jumping in the water that cold. But she was a remarkable person, wonderful sense of humor. And I invited her to join John Lee McFadden and a whole bunch of older, I'm in my young 20s, these people are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, but they all tentatively knew one another, and we all went up in this car caravan one day to the Catskills, and on this beautiful mountain range overlooking a whole valley, there was this building, and this was Bernard McFadden's original health sanitarium, and this is where thousands and thousands of people came to detox. And she said, they would come out of here every day, no matter what the temperature, and do sunbathing and air bathing. And I said, what do you mean? Well, he'd have them get out here in a bathing suit, no matter what it was. You had to stay out here. He wanted you to be invigorated. He came from that school, believed that you got to challenge the immune system. We know he was absolutely correct. The more you're exposed to harsh weather, the stronger your immune system. And then they go inside and they would get a hot tub, and then they have juices and teas. And we had hundreds of different teas. We had a special herbalist. I thought, well, how neat is that? Beautiful environment around nature and eating and drinking good things. And, for 50 years, that all went away. After his death, no one did that. One guy out in California did. Chiropractor, a nice guy. And then Dr. Walker did it, and Pablo Arola did it. Paul Bragg did it. He was a wonderful guy, too. I met him. His daughter's still around. Anyhow, that just came to my mind because it was the beet juice therapy that Kellogg was doing to help people lower their blood pressure that Bernard McFadden took over. And then Dr. Walker used, Pablo Arola used it. I heard about it from Pablo Arola. And now today, here's the latest. This is from the British Journal of Nutrition. Quote, consuming beetroot juice reduces blood pressure due to the high nitrite content of the vegetable. And it was only 100 grams of 100 grams, that's a tiny amount, that's 3 ounces, lowered the blood pressure in these people. Quote, results from these studies are the first to demonstrate that acute ingestion of beetroot juice lowered blood pressure in a near-dose-dependent manner in healthy, non-moto-intensive individuals, wrote the professor who did it. Well, might have been the first to prove it, wasn't the first to do it. You're about 120 years late. But for all of you who have high blood pressure, beetroot juice can help lower it, and it's all natural and no bad side effects. Now to our issue of the day. I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view after this, please. This is from Richard Clark. Why Wall Street must crash and must hit bottom, I'll quote him. As market analyst Paul Farrell recently said, America cannot reset or repair its economy because Wall Street cannot and won't give up its addictive behavior. So let's run through the full diagnosis of why Wall Street can't change. What follows here are the 10 characteristics of the self-destructive, addictive personality. Now, as you listen to the 10 I'm going to share with you right now, and also the paragraph that follows each one, it's about what's happening right now today on Wall Street. 1. Amnesia. Since the 2008 meltdown, Wall Street's memory has been erased. Why? Because Wall Street doesn't want to hear anything that would allow it to think long-term. Everything they do is a banker's short-term thinking, which means that any potential risk they marginalize to zero. They're willing to do anything. Oh, with your money. Because they know that they'll be bailed out. Why? Because they have been bailed out. Two, overly optimistic. Wall Street Casino is blowing another mega bubble. Since the dot-com crash of 2000, when the Dow peaked at 11,000, Wall Street has lost an inflation-adjusted 20% of your retirement money. And economist Gary Schilling says no growth through the next decade. Professor down at NYU, Nouriel Roubini, warns of a decade of, quote, dark days. PIMCO's Bill Gross sees a, quote, new normal of lower returns. GMO's Jeremy Grantham predicts seven lean years. Famed market analyst Martin Wise warns of a historic world-changing event is about to crush the U.S. economy and its stock market. Former Reagan budget analyst David Stockman says, I won't touch stocks today with a 100-foot pole. And yet, Wall Street continues to live in a fantasy land as it ignores all these warnings and all these signs, as it continues to push mega IPOs and very risky bonds. These are junk bonds. Three, they're immature, totally narcissistic, the king baby syndrome. Yes, Wall Street's an immature child. Members of AA call this the king baby syndrome, referring to people who never really grow up. They want what they want when they want it, now. No compromise, like today's politicians. In his book, The Coming Generational Storm, Larry Klucnikoff and Scott Burns warn of the massive debt we're leaving our kids. Eventually, these kids will rebel against the $70 trillion burden we've passed on to them. Wall Street's gambling addicts will face a revolution that makes the Arab Spring look like a picnic. Greedy, yes. Greed is still good for Wall Street gamblers. Michael Douglas' famous indictment is truer today than ever. Vanguard's founder, Jack Bogle, confronted the toxicity of out-of-control greed in his book, The Battle for the Soul of Capitalism. Wall Street has become a soulless, amoral culture that cares nothing about the rest of America. Wall Street has sunk back deep into their business-as-usual culture of greed, fully blind to the public consequences of their behavior. Ethics, integrity, fiduciary duty, none of that exists. Investors come second, insiders first, always. And nothing will change till Wall Street hits bottom, crashes. Then and only then can we truly reform Wall Street as we did in the 1930s. Compulsive liars. Never trust anything that anyone ever tells you from Wall Street. They're incapable of telling the truth. Members of AA usually use a simple test. How can you tell when an alcoholic or addict is lying? Answer, his lips are moving. Similarly, you can't believe anything said on Wall Street. Why this culture of lying? Simple. To create illusions. Like, investors come first. You can trust us. We have the best interests of America at heart. All wrong. There are only loyalties to insiders, period. Insatiable. Wall Street's hooked on more is never enough. Wall Street is past the point of no return. It's an addict incapable of stopping, and so it must hit bottom. In his book, American Mania, psychiatrist Peter Wybrow says we're a nation of addicts, we're insatiable, and that more is never enough. To wit, trillions of new debt annually, immense bonuses, zero savings as banks' bailout rolls on, and why the Federal Reserve forever feeding Wall Street's cheap money. Forget reforms. There'll be no change till the banks hit bottom. A return to Glass-Steagall might help, but Wall Street hates that as much as addicts hate the thought of ending up at the Betty Ford Clinic, and since Wall Street owns Congress, there'll be no return to anything like Glass-Steagall until after the crash. Macho. Regardless of the fact, Wall Street can't admit failure. Addicts cannot see their weaknesses. In his book, Confronting Reality, Larry Bodzi and Ram Charan warned the greatest consistent damage to business and their owners is a result of not poor management, but their failure, sometimes willful, to confront reality. Like Wall Street insiders, they simply cannot admit the gross mistakes, moral lapses, crimes, catastrophic errors, and judgment that triggered the 2008 crash. They're blind to their faults. they do not want to see them, and they won't. Man, this guy should have been to a BAI meeting of management. Put that in there. Unpredictable. Wall Street gamblers haven't a clue about the future. Well, there's another one we can have. In his book, Stocks for the Long Run, Jeremy Siegel studied market history from 1801 to 2000, comparing the biggest ups and downs. Bottom line, markets are random. There were no obvious reasons for 75% of the moves that trigger either long-term gains or long-term losses. Wall Street cannot predict crashes, but they can create them. Irrational. Wall Street gets rich off investor irrationality. Behavioral economics is the psychology of investment decisions. It's based upon Nobel economist Daniel Kahneman's, who essentially proved that investors are irrational. That was in 2002, and investors are still irrational. And yet we still assume we're making rational decisions. As behavioral finance guru Richard Thaler once admitted, Wall Street needs investors who are irrational, woefully uninformed, endowed with strange preferences for some other reason willing to hold overpriced assets. And so it is that the naive, irrationally of Main Street investors make the Wall Street crowd very rich. Well, how about everyone who's a Democrat and Republican card-carrying member of the irrational, let's believe that this person is a pathological liar, is going to do different next time, everyone from FDR till this day? Whoa. Okay. Isn't it amazing when you see what someone's doing and then you say, but didn't you see what they're doing? But that's not what I want them to do. That's not what they said they were going to do. They promised to do otherwise, so we're going to hold out for the time when they're going to actually honor their word, but they're never going to honor their word. They never have honored their word. Why can't you see that? We don't want to see it because it wasn't what we were promised. So we're still living with the belief that someday, I see exuberance then creates irrationality. And finally, myopic. Failure to think long-term guarantees another crash. Wall Street's addiction to short-term thinking guarantees another crash. But worse, Wall Street's short-sightedness is setting up an inevitable global catastrophe and even the self-destruction of their own capitalist ideology. And those are thoughts. I'd like your responses. That's why I've said I do not believe that any institution, educational, religious, financial, medical, and by the way, everything that I just read from Mr. Clark about Wall Street being greedy, irrational, not willing to take credit for their mistakes, I could apply to medicine, dietitians, state legislators, the school system, you name the paradigm, the same principles apply. Until you get out of the system, you can't see it for what it is. And then once you're out, you're not allowed back in to make changes. No one who was once inside who criticized it is ever allowed back in again. It just doesn't happen in our society. So then where do we go? Well, you go to wherever you have voices who are willing to listen to you, offer instructive challenges, have open and civil debates, and then come together with the best ideas, and then together surrender your egos at the door and go forward. If you want to see that in action, I'm going to play you a clip right now of a group of demonstrators who got together with no major environmental organization. And if you want to know what I think of all environmental organizations, download my Monday evening Progressive Commentary Hour, where I had an hour and a half where we really went at it, dissecting every one of the major environmental organizations. And as one of the individuals said, there is no environmental movement in America, nor has there ever been an environmental movement. We had a great environmentalist. She alone deserves credit for what came, and that was Rachel Carson. No one can stand in her shadow. She simply did more than what any of us did without any of the resources we have today, without the networks. She took the full brunt of the attack against her when she exposed the dangers of DDT. She was just a gentle person. So when Ralph Nader, who did more to protect America than any group of human beings in our history, with over 280 pieces of legislation, including the Clean Air Act, the Environmental Protection Agency, and all these others, which every president since then has tried to, and been successful in taking away, including Al Gore, which I've yet to hear him come forward and apologize and do a truth and reconciliation of what he did with Clinton and destroying the environmental movement and what they're doing today. She alone was our environmental movement. Everyone else has been exploiting it, except the people at the lay level, and they're the good people doing the good work. So you don't need a big group that won't even know who you are, has not been. They weren't there a week ago Sunday when we were in front of Indian Point. Oh, is nuclear radiation not an issue? They weren't there in Washington, D.C., where we had Vandana Shiva and Jeffrey Smith and Dr. Broner's son. Oh, is genetic engineering not an important issue? They weren't there in front of the governor's office against hydrofracking. Oh, hydrofracking is not an issue? What is the issue then in the environment? Trying to protect our water, our soil, our food? No, they're too busy making money and having four-hour lunches. But we've made it, we've believed that because they existed and they were always on television that they had our interests at stake. They don't. And I offered them a challenge, come on the show and debate me. We wrote every single one. Now, here's what happens when just lay people get together, grassroots, and decide to take on Monsanto and Bill Gates at Bill Gates' headquarters and the Gates Foundation to tell them why we don't want genetically modified anything.
I'm here today to ask the Gates Foundation to sever all their ties with the with Monsanto. Currently, they're opening up markets throughout Africa for corporations like Monsanto, Syngenta, Bayer, Dow, all the major agribusinesses that have destroyed our food system here in this country. The Gates Foundation is looking to export our model, our broken model, to Africa, and hundreds of thousands of farmers are trying to organize against these giants, but they don't have the resources to get their voices heard. So we're here today to reflect their voices and make them heard.
I don't want to find out that when I'm 40 or 50, I'm going to have health effects that I can blame Monsanto for.
As a medical physician and practitioner, I'm really concerned about the new Dow Monsanto conglomeration of 2,4-D, which is half the exfoliant of Agent Orange. It's about to be approved. If the 2,4-D experimental corn becomes available, it will run into, spill into the surrounding lands, into the watershed. It will affect all fish.
More than enough proof that Monsanto seeds aren't working here in the U.S. Failures with weed resistance, pesticide resistance. And one of the major issues that we have with the seeds being introduced into Africa is intellectual property rights. African farmers can't afford these seeds. And the Gates Foundation is helping them to afford these seeds by opening up microcredit organizations, which puts farmers into a debt cycle that ultimately leads to them losing their land and having to move into the city.
So we got to keep working together as GMO Free Washington, as the Fair Trade Coalition, as Community Alliance for Global Justice, and all the educators to keep putting the pressure on the Gates Foundation to be responsive to all the people. Yeah?
We'll be back! 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 We'll be back!
Hands off America's food supply! Monsanto profits while people die!
That's just a group of several dozen individuals working together with one cause, one focus, one voice. Different articulate spokespersons. That's what we need. But yet, until you get out there and go after it, you won't appreciate how much power that gives the group. And I just see that we have to remake our entire environmental movement, throw all these other companies, don't give them any more money, don't give them any more support. And all these are small groups working together. That's how it got up to Indian Point. Small groups organizing it. People who don't have backgrounds but learn. And today you can learn quickly and we can organize. So that's where we're going with the environmental movement. More on that coming up. Real quick on the environmental movement. Quote from Common Dreams. Obama set to speed up approval of tar sands pipeline. Although President Obama denied a permit for the main Keystone XL pipeline from Canada's tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico in January, he is expected to announce tomorrow on a visit to Cushing, Oklahoma, a plan to speed up the permit for the southern section of that same pipeline, which would carry tar sand crude from Cushing to Port Arthur, Texas. Nora Greenwood for the Center for Biological Diversity said Keystone may be a boon to big oil companies in the exporting business, but those profits will come at a stiff price for our land, water, wildlife, and climate. He is right. Next up on the environment. Does genetically modified food increase the incidence of obesity? A study on this, genetically modified corn increases body weight in rats, from Washington Blog and Global Research. Quote, many crops in the United States are now genetically modified. For example, 93% of soybeans grown in the U.S. are genetically engineered, as are 86% of all corn, 93% of canola, 93% of cottonseed oil, and 95% of all sugar beets planted were genetically engineered to be able to tolerate high dose of pesticide Roundup. Some algae that Roundup kills healthy gut bacteria, and that genetically modified corn can cause other health problems. So that's why we're suggesting, we're advocating, don't buy anything genetically modified. Buy local, buy organic, and that way you don't have that problem. France bans genetically modified corn amidst mass U.S. protests against Monsanto, from Randy Anana, Global Research. Quote, amid mass U.S. protests against Monsanto in mid-March, France imposed a temporary moratorium on the planting of Monsanto's genetically modified corn. Okay, that's good. We got to keep the pressure up. And World Water Forum paves the way to privatize nature, undermine human rights to water in the Rio 20 conference. This is from Bob Barlow, who we've had on this program, chair of the Council of Canadians. Quote from Marseille, the sixth World Water Forum this week, despite lagging attendance and Sarkozy's reneging on his promise to attend, was still an opportunity for multinational water corporations to solidify their plans to further privatize all the water in the world they can. Well, that's not good for us, because whoever owns the water controls life, because you need water. And all over the world, they're owning the water and charging us for it. And finally, this is from Anthony Gucciardi from Natural Society. Sorry, Bill Gates, genetically modified crops proven to be ineffective at fighting world hunger. I'll quote this. Monsanto shareholder Bill Gates has argued that genetically modified organisms are the solution to world hunger, going as far to say that they are actually needed to fight worldwide starvation. Unfortunately for Gates, who back in 2010 bought 500,000 shares of the company, he is now promoting in mainstream media as the solution to the world's problem. A team of 900 scientists have found that genetically modified crops are actually not effective at fighting world hunger. In fact, the massive team found that Monsanto's seeds, which have led to thousands of farmers' suicides due to excessive costs and failure of crop yields, were outperformed by traditional agroecological farming practices, meaning organic. So, funded by the World Bank and the United Nations, an organization was created known as the International Assessment of Agricultural Knowledge, Science, and Technology for Development. Consisting of 900 scientists and researchers, they set out to examine the complex issue of world hunger. While the issue of world hunger may be quite complex, the results were not. Quite plainly, the group found that genetically modified crops were not, I repeat, were not a meaningful solution to the problem. In other words, the expert team showed through rigorous analysis and repeated study that the claims of Bill Gates are completely inaccurate. Perhaps what is more compelling, though, is the fact that Bill Gates was fully aware of these findings before going on the air to inform the public that GMOs are the solution to world hunger, the same GMOs that have been linked to organ damage, mutated insects, and a host of other illnesses. The findings of this scientific group regarding the ineffectiveness of genetically modified crops were published April 15, 2008. That is long before Bill Gates' address to the public in the late January this year. Did he ignore this information, or does he believe that 900 scientists to be incorrect? So that's the latest on Bill Gates. More to come. Back in a moment with your calls. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. We'll take your calls. Go to our guest in just a moment. welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We'll be taking calls as they come in. I'm on the road. I'll be on the road for the next 2 months filming. My goal this time is to film as many senior citizens as possible around the United States to see how they're coping. And already the stories are just heartbreaking. I won't go into them now, but I will on an upcoming program where I'll give you some audio clips from the film I'm doing. And when you hear how much they're suffering in silence without any help from our government, you'll think, why have we lost our connection with our greatest group, our senior citizens? But we have. But we have to show this in order for people to understand it. And we will. Now, we're going to go to our guest in a moment, but we want to take a few of your calls, as we always like to get your input. And also, we have Luann Panessi on the line. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. I just want to ask you a quick question. I know you've been talking a lot about homesteading and about the importance of having people get off the grid and you know, eat from the land and things like that. I've gotten quite a bit of emails lately with people asking about what criteria, what do they need to do to be a part of your homestead, and I would rather have you tell us on the air what exactly you're looking for people for the homestead project. And this way, I'll be happy to take their calls and go over it with them.
Okay, this will just take a moment and to put this in proper perspective. I believe that there's a number of Americans, I'm going to guess maybe 5 to 10%, who are willing to make substantive changes in their lifestyle over the next couple of years, meaning changing from genetically engineered food to organic, stop buying in the Walmarts and the box stores where they've taken in products from China that were once made in the U.S. by U.S. labor, and instead support locally made products. In other words, get off this whole idea that you have to sit in front of a television and sit in front of a computer and that's your reality. I believe that we're going to find ourselves in the midst of food shortages, at least a lot of Americans, probably two-thirds. The rest won't have a problem. If you have the money, there will always be products for you. But what about the people who don't have all the money? I'm filming them right now. If you only saw what I filmed, the woman eating cat food for 5 straight days, and all she had was one can of cat food a day for 5 straight days. This was a person who worked for 30 years in a company, but her company was taken over by a multinational. Her pension was taken away. She's too young for Social Security. Well, how's she supposed to live? She has no other family. And unless you see this is going on, yet they're invisible. So I'm thinking, okay, we can't change everything, but boy, we can change ourselves. So I'm one of those people who believe that we don't want to wait for the solar storms and hope that they're not as devastating as they're going to be or could be, or be the last person to decide we're living in the wrong place, or that maybe we should be more self-sufficient. When I was growing up, everyone was self-sufficient. Everyone. My brother, my older brother, was so good with a car, you could put a blindfold on him, he could take a transmission apart and put it back together. We all knew plumbing, most knew electricity, we all knew carpentry and masonry. You didn't have services, you did it yourself. Today, we only have services. Rare is a person does anything for themselves. So what I've envisioned is, around the United States, where people choose to, they can develop the skills necessary for getting off the grid, and part of that is getting back onto the land. I believe that farmland will be one of our most important resources in the future, because at least then you can grow food, especially if it has good water, and you can have food banks that are collecting heirloom organic seed. And also you can do this with other people, whether it's a family who does it together or a couple or a group. And it depends upon the mix of personalities and whether or not these people are compatible to live in a common area, have their own individual lives, but have different crafts and share that. And I believe that's going to be a necessity. So because I am a certified organic farmer and a beekeeper and have been so my entire adult life, I've decided that I will help people who want to get into a homesteading mode to see what it actually is. Now, some people, it's not about working the land. And working the land, you got to understand soil, microorganisms, and you have to understand what, zones and what that means as far as what will be planted and what will grow and what won't. And at the same time, we need to understand marketing. How do you get your local product you're growing to a market and sell it to restaurants, stores, supermarkets, a farmer's market, wherever it may be? And then how do you store it? How do you pickle it? How do you dry it? How do you save seeds? There are 1,000 things to learn. If you just run out there and buy a piece of property, you're going to fail. If you don't realize how hard at work it is, you're going to fail. If you don't realize you're going to get calloused and, you know, hands, and you're going to have a sore back, because someone has to weed, someone has to plant, someone has to do the work of being on the ground. If you're not used to that, you have to know what it's about. So I'm going to set aside a week at a time while I'm at my ranch, and I'm going to jump back to Florida for like the month of May and half of April, because I can jump out, because I'm going to be doing Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky. And those are days I can drive out, spend 2 days on the road, and drive back. And that way I'll be able to help people and see whether or not they have the skills and aptitude, attitude, and behavior to succeed. And a lot of it's behavior. Everybody's going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. It's whether or not you're able to do it with a positive attitude or negative attitude. This is too hot. This is too hard. This blah, 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 blah. Then it's not going to work. If you've got a good attitude, it can work. So that's one thing I'm willing to do. Separately is, some people don't want to work the soil. They want to work with foods. All right, that's good too, especially if you can bake things, make things, dry things, and market them, because people need to eat and people are more interested in healthy items. By the way, we're seeing about 100 brand new different items a week in the health food store. There's over 35,000 different natural foods out there right now to select from. That means someone had to invent those. Someone had to test them. Someone had to go through trial and error till they got it perfect and then market it. All that's a process. So I'm open to people who want to do food prep, and there won't be any charge for, you know, the food and for eating. But if they're going to do that, they have to pay for their own food. But at least it's a way for them to see for a week if they can do something. If they can, then later they can further develop those skills through the resources out there and then take that further. My own homestead, not the one in Florida, the one I'm almost close to completing and hope to actually be in construction in another 2 months, is hopefully going to be the model for this that can be used by others to say that we can do the same thing on a different scale. I'm planning on having one village of just nothing but homeless vets to try to help them psychologically, spiritually, and physically before they go home. I'm hoping to have the first holistic assisted living center to show that you don't have to go from being healthy, less healthy, assisted living, nursing home death. You can actually reverse that. So I've got a lot of ideas, and those will be worked out once this property is actually developed. So that's it, Luann. Does that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Then let people call you.
Them contact me at my home office, 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. Or they can even email me at whnn@aol.com. And I'll be happy to discuss it with anybody.
Thank you very much. And for those of you who are on the line, Tricia from New York, Patricia from New York, I'm going to go to you in a moment, but I promise my guest, and people can continue listening once we go off the air over the telephone or over Progressive Radio Network over the telephone. If you don't have internet, here's the nice new technology. You can listen to this program by calling 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. I gave his background early in the program. Let's now say hello to Ken DeVecchio. Nice to have you with us today, Ken.
Hey, Gary. It's great to be with you.
Now, Ken, you're running for the Senate in New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm running for U.S. Senate against the incumbent Senator Menendez. He's a Democrat.
Okay. I'm going to run down some questions. I just want you to do the following for our audience. Tell us yes or no. That's all. But then if people want to know why it's yes or no, they can contact you at your organization or your email and you can give us that information. But I just want to see where you're at on these positions coming from a progressive and more populist point of view that we represent, all right?
Absolutely, and if they do want to contact me to get further information, it's KenForSenate.com. That simple. My first name, KenForSenate.com, all spelled out.
Okay, now, please, Ken, just a yes or no, all right?
Certainly.
Here we go. Reduce the military budget to $300 billion annually compared to the $1.4 trillion it is now.
Yes.
Pull our troops out of Afghanistan and mercenary forces in Iraq and end our other foreign occupations and undertake extensive closing of overseas military bases.
Yes, immediately.
Repeal the National Defense Authorization Act, repeal the Patriot Act, repeal the Homeland Security Act, and stop all spying on and harassment and classification of protesters as terrorists.
I've written about this extensively. Absolutely, yes.
Converge the FBI and CIA into a single agency with greater transparency and independent outside monitoring.
Yes.
Put a stop to the influence of Homeland Security as, for example, local city police and state police that have been turned into military departments. Bring them back to their previous status.
Yes.
Face the reality that banks are too big to fail and let them fail and no longer prop up a single bank or other corporation that is too big to fail.
I've made movies about this. Absolutely, yes. Bailouts are absurd.
Go after corporation lawbreakers and try them in accordance with the crimes they have committed, including governing officials from previous administrations that have proven they have broken the law.
Yes.
See subsidies to all of the major industries, big agri, big oil, big banking, big pharma, etc.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that one.
Big pharma, big banking, big agri, big oil, stop the subsidies.
Oh, yes.
Withdraw the U.S. from World Health Organization, NAFTA, GATT, etc.
Yes.
Acknowledge that there were 12 million children starving and 50 million homeless in the United States and put a moratorium on home foreclosures and find a humane way to address the needs of these people, especially the children.
Yes, government has to have a human side to it. Absolutely.
Support freedom of health care choices and support the recognition of foods and supplements and natural medicines as legitimate forms of prevention and treatment when supported by independent research.
Yes, of course.
Dismantle completely the FDA and replace it with an agency of independent scientists to evaluate without drug industry representation the safety and efficacy of medicines.
Yes, along with most or all of the other alphabet soup agencies.
Remove all pro-GMO advocates and officials from the USDA and health departments.
Yes.
Tackle the crimes of our largest private polluters, particularly the U.S. military-industrial complex, so they have to clean up the mess they've made.
Yes.
Assure the veterans that are going to get care and need the necessary treatments to help them over post-traumatic stress disorder and Gulf War syndrome.
These people are putting their lives on the line for us, and that's not just a line. Yes, absolutely.
Cease all TSA from all airports and find a better way of securing our safety without the invasion and sexual assault of them being able to fondle us. Where we're done on the street, it'd be a crime in the airport. They're doing so now with impunity.
Yes, and Rand Paul took a great stand on that issue.
All right. Well, those are some but not all the issues I have, but I wanted our audience to know where you stood on these, so here we have it. We have Ken.
Thank you, Gary.
Ken is here, a former judge, has tried over 400 criminal cases. He's now running for the Senate in New Jersey. He's a critically acclaimed filmmaker. He's written, produced, and directed 15 feature films. He also is a legal scholar, and he is the owner of the Criminal Law Learning Center, where he's taught thousands of police officers and lawyers. And he believes that we need a more progressive and more populist, conscientious way of approaching our problems. And compare that and compare how he just answered these with what your average senator, Democrat or Republican, would have answered those. And he says he's committed to being in writing on every one of these issues. So if he is ever elected to the Senate from New Jersey, you can hold him accountable because he made these promises on this program. Ken, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on your show, Gary, and I thank your listeners for listening to me again. And if they do want more information, KenForSenate.com.
And that's Ken DeVecchio, DelVecchio. Ken DeVecchio. Ken DeVecchio.
Correct.
From New Jersey, who's running for Senate, and he's told us what he stands for. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Gary. Take care.
I'm Gary Noll. We're up to the end of our regular program. Now let's, and I want to thank all of you for having listened. However, we have some additional people on the line, and we want to get to their calls. So let's go over and say hello to Tricia from New York. Tricia, you're on.
Hi, Gary. Thanks so much for your superb coverage on GMOs. And it's really quite rare to find it accurate media coverage on this issue. So thank you so much. I just wanted to remind, if you hadn't mentioned, that the USDA has extended their comment period on Agent Orange corn through April 27th, and that the truefoodnow.org has a link to being able to protest.
Great. Give us that again so people, and you should protest. Please, everyone, this is what I'm talking about. Let us, not the big environmental organizations, let us, the lay public, let us, the grassroots movement, make the calls, because it's our environment, not theirs, and it's our right to stand up. So please call. Tell them how they can do this, Tricia.
TrueFoodNow.org, and that is TrueFoodNow, no spaces, .org, and that is part of Center for Food Safety site. It's got a new link, so you can go there, and you can find out how to protest. And April 27th is the last day. They extended it on February 22nd. The comment period, where there was only 5 days left, and they decided to extend it to April 27th. So it's really our opportunity now to be able to get out there and to be able to be vocal, because this is the way it's going to show in the numbers towards, and it's all, everything is transparent as far as the numbers go. They do usually accurately say, okay, we've had a million people protesting. So that would be wonderful.
We will do that.
And, thank you so much.
And send over to Jason and Myron so we can post this to make sure it gets up on our website.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Stephen from Yonkers, your turn, Stephen.
Hey, how are you? I just wanted to know if you have ever seen the video of Bill Gates where talks about reducing the population through vaccines and genetically modified food.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Have you ever talked about that? I just wanted to get that out there so the public knows about it.
Yes,
all.
I have. He is a eugenics supporter.
As his father was, I believe, the head of Planned Parenthood also. Is that right? And I know the original founder was a eugenicist.
Margaret Sanger believed that approximately 10% of the American population should be killed because they were feeble-minded or unworthy, and to live because they would pollute the genetic stock of others. And it was that movement, Dr. Popenpohl, that led to the eugenics movement in Germany, which led to the consequences of millions of people suffering and dying.
Right.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Gary.
And one last quick one, Patricia from New York. Patricia?
Oh, hi, Gary. How are you? I was just watching a program last night, Craig Ferguson, Late Late Show, and Kathy Bates was on from NBC on Howard Law. She was talking about how she had heard about their sending the drones from Afghanistan and Iraq to America to spy on the Americans. So I just thought to...
They're not sending the ones that are there over here. They're planning 16,000 drones over the entire United States to spy on citizens. And if you think that's bad, consider this. They currently have and have had for some time vans that go up and down the streets that can look into your home, see everything you're doing, and hear everything you're doing, and record that. How would you feel if you knew that outside your house there was someone driving from a national security agency that was monitoring everything you were saying, everything you were doing, and recording it? That's what we've come to. Next, the Solution Zone with special guest Congressman Dennis Kucinich. I'm Gary Noll. Have a nice day, everyone. I'm
We'll be right back.